Thank you for listening to the LA Catholic Morning Podcast. To help us broadcast all the good, true, and beautiful, please go to our support page on archangelradio.com.
Time to wake up, Lower Alabama! From the original home of Mardi Gras, moon pies, and more, this is LA Catholic Morning.
It's Wednesday, and Ellen Taylor here. Todd is out. He's driving to Louisiana for a funeral for his wife, Angel's uncle. So we have prayers up for them and for safe travels and for the soul of her uncle. So you got me. You got Mikey, Mike Romano, and Reed Hodges there.
Doing my thing.
It's Wednesday, Mike. So, you know, it's downhill from here. You know,
yeah,
we're on the bike. Don't even need to pedal.
It's Thursday Eve. Look at it that way, okay?
Right. Almost there. So today, I'm going to start with the morning offering.
Let's do it.
Beautiful prayer. It's a prayer a lot of us remember from our youth, and maybe you don't say it so often, but it's simple and it's right to the point. So we're going to start there. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. O Jesus, through the Immaculate Heart of Mary, I offer you my prayers, works, joys, and sufferings of this day for all the intentions of your Sacred Heart, in union with the holy sacrifice of the Mass throughout the world, for the salvation of souls, the reparation of sins, and for the reunion of all Christians, and in particular the intentions of the Holy Father this month. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. We thank our sponsor, Eastern Shore Urgent Care, Daphne, offering walk-in medical attention for minor emergencies and illnesses, open 7 days a week. Visit them on Urgent Care Drive across from the Lowe's, or contact them at 251-626-3782 or at esucare.com.
And in world news, Trump could be indicted by a Manhattan grand jury as soon as this week, potentially charged with falsifying business records connected to hush money payments during his 2016 campaign to women who accused him of sexual encounters. An indictment in New York would mark an extraordinary turn in American history, making Trump the first former president to face a criminal charge. In his Wednesday address, the Pope said to effectively witness to the gospel, Christians need to be consistent in what they believe, how they live, and what they preach, adding that the witness of an authentically Christian life involves a journey to holiness. Disney will release a new documentary next month titled The Pope Answers, airing an extended conversation between Pope Francis and 10 members of the Generation Z discussing the church's stance on LGBTQ+ issues, abortion, clergy abuse, feminism, and more. Shot in Rome and directed by left-leaning Spanish filmmakers Jordi Evolve and Marius Sanchez, the documentary is entirely in Spanish and will be released exclusively on Hulu in the U.S. A Kansas proposal based on the disputed idea that providers leave newborns to die after unsuccessful abortions is nearing legislative approval as Republicans pursue limited anti-abortion measures following a decisive statewide vote last year protecting abortion rights. Beginning on July 1st, only biological girls will be allowed to participate in 7th through 12th grade girls' athletic competitions in Wyoming. Speaking of sports, mm-hmm. I'm deeply saddened and very disappointed.
Mike had an early morning rant.
You heard my early morning rant. I'm not going to get into it. Japan defeated the U.S. last night in a 3-2 game in the World Baseball Classic. But hey, we still got to World War II, so there's that.
You know, all of our players are in spring training right now for them.
I know. It doesn't count. When you don't have Aaron Judge out there, you don't have your best players. It doesn't count. I'm sorry. Enjoy it, though, Japan. Congratulations.
On the line with us, we have regular Wednesday morning guest Tom Riello, who I'm sure was up on the edge of his seat watching World Baseball Classic last night, too.
Well, you know, and another consolation for Mike there, Ellen, is we have King Kong Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
We got King Kong. Mm-hmm. They got Godzilla. We got King Kong. Who won? Who won? Right? There we go.
Dominated.
There we go.
Yeah.
Hong Kong had his more violent hips, violent hands, as Christian, as Father Chris Booten would say.
Tom, I always like when you join us on Wednesdays because we get your hot takes, sometimes passionate about certain issues of the day. And it seems that the bishop in the Diocese of Baker, which is in Oregon, mm-hmm. has released a statement on transgender policies for their Catholic diocese. And in doing a little research on this, Tom, I found out that there were something like 34 dioceses that are slowly rolling out clarification on this. So you sent it and you said this is how we need to talk about these issues. So break it down for us.
Yeah, Bishop Liam Carey, who is an older vocation to the priesthood and then was a priest about 12 years. So he's almost approaching retirement age, but he's only been a priest and now a bishop since 2012 and a priest for about 18 years prior to that. So he was about 40 in his 40s when he got ordained. So older vocation. But he really, I think, hit it out of the park in his diocese. Now, of course, you know, he's in Oregon, and Oregon's got a lot of these issues are more prevalent there than, say, in Alabama. But the policy and the language that he used, the theological language, the anthropological language, I think is the language that we have to talk. We have to stop playing the game of the sociological jargon that's out there. And it begins right off the bat saying, in a remarkably short time. Mm-hmm. I think that's where people just have to take a moment to think, where were we 10 years ago? Nobody, very few people, nobody in the main culture would have ever said that in 10 years, a Dylan Mulvaney would be the number one star on TikTok and, you know, is this celebrity and Drew Barrymore is bending on her knee and kind of a bizarre role reversal of her acting like the man and he's the woman. People would have said, you're going down a slippery slope. They always thought that was always the dog whistle, right? Oh, stop with the slippery slope arguments, if you remember that.
Oh, yes.
Well, if you remember during the time, and Archbishop Brody at the time said this, if everybody thinks that with the same-sex marriage debate and decision, and if you asked Archbishop Brody, I mean, even in 2013 and whatnot, Archbishop Brody would have said, you know, culturally we're losing this battle. And the inevitability was the Supreme Court decision. Everybody could kind of see where that was going. But what was the thing that everybody would say? Well, this is gonna put a stop to all the other stuff. Oh. Because this is all anybody really wants. And it was a lie. And everybody knew it was a lie, right? And Archbishop Brody even said at the time, I know for a fact that there are law cases right now in the pipeline and they're just waiting in the queue to bring these cases to the point of the whole transgender thing and the thruples, you know, polyamorists. And now you have cases in Spain, they're floating the balloon about animal and human. I mean, this is something that we have to speak about. I would prefer not to. Mm-hmm. I would love to today to talk about the hypostatic union for 45 minutes. I don't want to have to talk. Right? But this is what we're dealing with. And so it's as it points out, this transgender agenda, say that three times, has swept all before it, right? Rapidly expanding its bureaucratic dominance in government. We have an administration now that is publicly in favor of what? Chemical castration of children. Mm-hmm. And this said by the Catholic President Joe Biden is the loving thing to do.
We have
to face up to this.
It has. And I think what Bishop Carey, I think his name is Liam Carey.
Yep, Liam Carey. Great name.
He laid it out clearly because he starts first laying out and quoting from scripture how we're beautifully made and God has prepared this body for us. So he starts from a scriptural standpoint of how we're made and who we are in God. And so then he kind of rolls out and it's all based on biblical and theology to then come to the point Where, of course, eventually you can see where it's going, is that we cannot abide by these, any of these issues in our Catholic culture, in our Catholic diocese, in our Catholic schools, in our parishes.
Right, exactly. I love that language from Hebrews 10, verse 5, a body you prepared for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the writer to the letter to the Hebrews takes the psalmist's words, applies them to Jesus. And what did Jesus get that body for? He gave that body so that he could offer that body up, right? And mm-hmm. how beautiful the Eucharistic overtones, right? Jesus offers his body on the wood of the cross. And what does he do at every Mass
mm-hmm.
through the priest? He offers his body to you and to me at the altar, right? This is my body. And it's very nuptial. It's nuptial language. It's marital language. Because in the marriage between a man and a woman, we give each other our bodies. In fact, in the old English, the language is, with the body I do worship. With mm-hmm. the body I do worship. And so our bodies are not ancillary to this whole process. Our dear friend Father Driscoll pointed out that the transgender movement really is a neo-Gnostic movement, because the body just becomes dumb matter. The real part of me is this part of me that is intangible, and that's the part of me that's telling me that I'm a female or I'm a male. Mm-hmm. Even though my body says I'm a male or I'm a female, the real me is this spirit me, right? Mm-hmm. And so now what I got to do is I got to take the body and manipulate it to become the real me, right? Mm-hmm. Because they don't have a conception of what the body is. And, you know, I remember about a month ago you had a guest on talking about the theology of the body, and he wrote something in the Catholic thing. And he was right to point out that this is what makes me sad about theology of the body kind of being misused. It's become a quote-unquote sex ed kind of program. That's how it's been used, mm-hmm. right? But it's such a rope. It's so much more than that, right? It's so much more than that. It's an understanding of the human person that my body is revelatory. My body reveals me. It's not some kind of less than me, or the real me is the soul me. No, it's the body is the real me along with the soul. And in the body of Christ, not figuratively, literally, he takes a body to himself. And that body is not just any body. It's a male body. Mm-hmm. And it's not just any male body. It's a Jewish male body. And it's not just any Jewish male body. It's a body that comes from this woman. This virgin young woman from Nazareth, right? It's a concretized, bodily embodied experience. And that's what Bishop Carey's getting at. And then it develops into the fact that, you know, when Jesus offers himself, he takes upon himself the agony of the world. And he talks about the misery of the gender dysphoria.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at those who suffer with this, rather than celebrating it and glamorizing it, which unfortunately social media has allowed people to do, what's happened is this misery that has been created, then what happens when people try to, quote-unquote, fix this issue?
Mm-hmm. And
suicide rates go up.
Yeah.
Suicide rates go up.
And he says
nobody wants to address that.
He says their suffering is real, but it merits our compassion. And that's mm-hmm. very different than giving someone surgery, pouring drugs into someone to try to change their body into what their mind thinks it is. It's compassion, it's clear thinking, and we're not doing any of that. And he points that out, that is not a loving way to try to help someone heal.
No, it's not. It, you know, and this is something that really, and it does, it bothers me. Now, here's something, this is a little bit of really good news. At Montgomery Catholic in my classroom, I have 78 seniors in there, and mm-hmm. I have about 43 of the kids are Catholic, about 35 are not Catholic,
mm-hmm.
My senior class.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we run the gambit culturally, socially, religiously. This has been one of the first classes I've taught in a little while where overwhelmingly, they are agreeing with the church's teaching on marriage and sexuality.
Wow.
Now, they, that's not to dismiss the other classes that have come before them. Uh-huh. But I have not had any blowback from this class like I've had. I mean, I every year I read Archbishop Brody's letter on transgenderism that he wrote about 5 years ago. I can remember, you know, always having to say, okay, you know, one of my students I can remember in particular, you know, talking about, oh, that's a hateful article, and why did you make us read that? And I remember saying to her, look, this is not hateful. There's nothing hateful in here. You know, and I even said to her, I referenced what the Archbishop wrote about, you know, if I'm suffering from anorexia and I go to you and I say, you know, I just look overweight. But even objectively speaking, I'm clearly not overweight. Mm-hmm. There's a problem here, right? But I said to you, you know what? You're right. Yeah, don't eat. Mm-hmm. What would you think? Oh, that's different. I said, how is that different? Mm-hmm. It's only different, I said to this young person. I said, you only say it's different because it concerns sex. You ever notice all these cases? It's only different when it concerns sex because of sex.
Oh, yes.
Because what is, and I think this is something Father Dan Reno, he's the exorcist from Nashville, and I heard an interview with him recently. I think I mentioned it in passing last week. But he said it is not shocking to him that all of these issues all come down to the three-letter word that begins with S and ends in X. And he said the reason for that is because sex is the closest thing that human beings can come to God. Mm-hmm. Because it's only through sex that another soul is made. And so what's the first commandment in the Bible? Be fruitful and multiply, mm-hmm. right? What does St. Paul use as an image of Christ and his people? The image from Genesis 2, for this reason, a man leaves his mother and father and cleaves to his wife, and the two become one flesh. So if the devil can pervert sex, literally and figuratively, if he could twist it, then what does he do? He winds up violating that fundamental dignity by which the human person, male and female, can participate and be collaborators in making one more soul, mm-hmm. something that not even the angels can do.
That's true. And culture has always had this where the sex is kind of there, not spoken about. But then from that arises a lot of our problems in our culture. And but the bishop goes on to, Bishop Carey goes mm-hmm. on to give mm-hmm. very clear instructions what
yes.
is allowable and not allowable. And I mm-hmm. think it kind of sets a good path for other Catholic dioceses to look at in regards, you know, recognizing that parents are the primary role of educating
yes.
their children. People send their kids to Catholic schools because they know what kind of education they're going to get. They know what they're
right.
going to get taught and the ways and the things that Catholic education values. So they want that. You can't use pronouns. Everyone will use the
yep.
pronoun that is assigned to that person's sex and not anything called preferred pronouns.
Right.
Yeah.
In speech or in writing.
Yeah.
When they're not even just addressing them. I was in a store the other day and a person had the name and underneath it had the pronouns. And I thought, oh, my land, you got to be kidding
yeah.
me.
Right? I just want to buy some French bread. yeah.
Right.
You have to use the bathroom in the locker room that corresponds to your biological sex, which thank you. A person has to follow their sex specific dress codes and according to their biological sex. So you can't, through whatever means you want to maybe dress or not. And that, you know, Catholic school, we've always had dress codes. I can remember coming around with the ruler, measuring how short your skirt was. Mm-hmm. Only in extracurricular activities can you play on the sex-specific team of your biological sex.
Right.
And then overnight housing, camps, retreats, gatherings that are divided by sex, you have to attend with your proper biological sex. And this is the one I found interesting, too, that you're not allowed to take puberty blockers because
yes.
that is the gateway to where they will mm-hmm. then put you on cross-sex hormones and stuff. And they said, since it's a path that's going to lead to this, we cannot support that. So young people entrusted to our church may not take puberty blocking drugs. So that is all very interesting, very, very clear on a proper path for the Catholic institution that wants
that,
to follow.
That is what I loved about it. It
yeah.
You know, because a lot of times these things come out, they're like position papers.
Yes.
And that's fine. But what I loved about this is what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
It provides very clear, very defined this is what this now, this position paper, this wonderful theology I've just given you, mm-hmm. and this wonderful critique of the culture that I've just provided you, now this is how it's concretized. Mm-hmm. This is how it's going to be made manifest in our diocese, in our schools, in our parishes, and this is what we're going to do. And so there's very clear lines. But the thing that I love most about it is it's very winsome. Mm-hmm. It's very generous. Mm-hmm. It's very clear. Yeah. That's what we need. And we need more of this. We need to shout it from the rooftops. You know, this message, Open Pray, is the message that every bishop, the Bishop of Rome to the smallest bishop in some far remote island, and everyone in between, Catholic lay person, man and woman, this should be the message that we are shouting from the rooftops, because this is the message that the world may not realize it wants nor needs, but it's the message that will save the world.
Yeah. It's filled with compassion, too, and that's just that's the walk we're trying to walk. Tom Riello, always good to talk to you. We will speak with you next Wednesday.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Go to dioceseofbaker.org and click on their transgender policy, and you can read it through. It really is a beautiful statement on a pathway forward. Join the show next is Michelle Bornstein. She's the religion reporter for Washington Post, and we're going to break down, it's another possible scandal. We're going to break it down next. Welcome back to LA Catholic Morning. I'm Ellen Taylor. Todd is out today, but he's back tomorrow, so he promises. On the line with us, we have the Washington Post reporter for religion, Michelle Bornstein. And we're looking at an article she and Heather Kelly wrote about a Catholic group. This is the title if you want to Google it and read it. Catholic group spent millions on app data that tracked gay priests. Michelle, thank you so much for joining this show and helping us break down this story today.
Sure.
Great. So this was a story we first got a inkling of, I think it was back in 2021, when mm-hmm. Monsignor Beryl, it was found out that the app data tracking had targeted him in regards to he was on Grindr or one of those mm-hmm. websites mm-hmm. and he was at inappropriate places or doing inappropriate mm-hmm. things for a priest. But mm-hmm. what your story is very interesting for me because, you know, I had read it and moved on with other different things. I didn't realize that this was still, I guess, going on. Can you give us a little background of why this story is making the news again?
Yeah. So as you said, the story kind of made kind of worldwide news a couple of years ago, in part because, you know, I guess there was a salacious component, but I think the data privacy aspect was really shocking to a lot of people who didn't realize, oh, the data on your phone that says it's not identifying you, it could be identifying you if you have the right information and the right, you know, have enough money to purchase it. So this gentleman, Monsignor Beryl, it was the secretary general or sort of the administrator of the USCCB, the bishops conference, the bishops organization. Mm-hmm. And, the Pillar, a conservative Catholic newsletter, wrote some pieces based on some data it said it had acquired showing that he had been a regular on Grindr and that phone was tracked to a gay bar and to a gay spa mm-hmm. and he resigned. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, of course, wondered, like, you know, how did that happen? I mean, how does that work? And how expensive is that? And who invested in that? And what are the issues raised by surveillance and that kind of thing? So I had continued to, you know, do some reporting around it and also had folks come to me. And I learned through that reporting that the project had continued and had, you know, had cost at that point about over $4 million had been spent by a group of lay people, private, you know, individuals in Colorado who were investing in taking this data and purchasing more data and taking it to bishops around the country. And it was just so fascinating. It raised so many questions about data and also sort of about, you know, general ethics and Catholic ethics. You know, how do you confront when people are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, or they're struggling, or they're sinning, or they're failing? You know, how do different, you know, different communities respond to that? And I knew from my reporting that there was a lot of discussion about it among bishops, even though it was very quiet. But there really was a lot of them that were not happy about the project, and then people who welcomed it.
And that's interesting. It's like we're in a brave new world sometimes on how we navigate issues that we never thought we'd have to. This group, which is called Catholic Laity and Clergy for Renewal. Well, as somebody who raises money for a nonprofit, Catholic nonprofit, raising $4 million, they must have a lot of big name backers behind them. Were you able to discern anything about this group and what they're doing and I guess continuing to do with this information?
Yeah, so I wasn't able to, so the people who really got this going were, not active political type of activists that people might know their names. They're more just very wealthy, business people and philanthropists. Mm-hmm. Some of the, trustees' names were Mark Bauman, John Martin, and Tim Reichert. So these are, you know, private wealthy individuals who are active in the Denver Archdiocese, and they consider, you know, they give money to different things related to Catholic causes, and they considered this to be, you know, and they spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars each of them a year. There were several other, this is in our article, it links to the 990s that show who the donors were, but it was a small group of very wealthy people, and there was also the nonprofit that is affiliated with the with Catholic Charities in Denver. It's called the Catholic Foundation for Northern Colorado, which gave about $400,000 over a couple of years to this effort. So, it was a small number of people. And what I learned from working with my colleagues who cover data is that you can get a wide variety of data for not a lot of money as well. I mean, this was a very large body of data because it was years of dating apps, mm-hmm. primarily Grindr, which is an app that dating and hookup app that gay men use, but also a smattering of other dating and hookup app data from gay and straight apps. But people can buy, when you're looking around online and sometimes you try to find someone's phone number and there's these random websites like, oh, we'll give you their phone number or their, you know, I can't remember all the names of it, but there's a lot of little places where you can get data for a lot less money. And we've learned through data privacy people that, you know, police have used these sites instead of getting warrants when they wanted to find out who's at protest. Individuals have used this in domestic violence cases to track victims of that who then become, you know, they're victims of violence. I mean, there's like you said, it's a lot of new questions. Some of them are old questions, though. Uh-huh. I mean, in our story, we had some canon lawyers who said, you know, this is just a new technology. It's not really, these are ancient questions about how do you have a conversion of heart? And is this something that's going to evangelize? Is it going to help the church or hurt the church? I mean, these are, like I said, new and old questions.
So what they're doing is technically legal because the data and other companies use it, to give me an ad when I'm shopping online and to another product. So all this has been done. They've just kind of taken it and to try to find out or clear out if there's any nefarious things going on for especially priests that are called and make a vow to live a celibate life but are not doing so. Were you able to get any comments from any bishops around the country in regards to have they been contacted by the group and presented with information? Are there concerns that they have about it?
Yeah, I mean, one of the challenges in reporting on this kind of issue in the church is the, you know, real shutdown of public discussion and lack of transparency really no chance for sort of public discussion. We know from our reporting, we have an audio tape of the president of the group talking, and there was well over a dozen bishops who had received the information. We know some of the bishops, but we're not able to report on it just because we're trying to protect our sources. Over the year, I mean, I reached out to many, many bishops, you know, people who are involved in this project, and was never able to get anybody to return my calls. But I know from our reporting from, you know, again, these are direct conversations of the people who are involved in the project, that there were bishops who, you know, were very conflicted about the project. They didn't want to be seen as taking the information, mm-hmm. in part, I mean, for different reasons. One, because they felt it could harm their relationship with their priests and the rights of priests and sort of theological questions that would be raised by sort of placing one sin above another sin and tracking and all these different issues. And that they also didn't want to be seen as not taking the information. So we haven't been able to get, I've been trying to get the bishops conference, which again is more of an industry group. It's not like they speak for the bishops, but right. they do have an elected president to try to get them to, you know, talk a little bit more on the record about what issues they think were raised by the reporting. But so far we haven't been able to do that. And my impression is it's, you know, it's not something that bishops are talking about in public, but I know from our reporting that, you know, they had torn feelings about it. Some of them were disgusted by it. Some of them just kind of wanted to be arm's length from it. Some of them, I mean, there were people involved in the project who wanted to take the data and out priests. Mm-hmm. So they had disagreement themselves about what to do with the data.
And I think that is a problem we all have when we encounter new ways of uncovering things mm-hmm. that we're uncomfortable with. And probably mm-hmm. the bishops are responding much like all of us do. Is there questioning it, trying to perhaps if they receive it, use it in the right context? Mm-hmm. Have mm-hmm. I think you said in the reporting that some people, like we haven't seen any other public names exposed mm-hmm. from this yet, but possibly mm-hmm. behind the scenes, people either have been moved or taken retirement. Do you mm-hmm. know anything about that?
I mean, I don't know the extent of what's happened with mm-hmm. the data. I know from our reporting without the names that there have been priests that have been confronted by their bishops. And my understanding is not in a transparent way, mm-hmm. You know, that they might be removed from a position or, you know, be not get a promotion or be kind of watched but not know why. There was just a, you know, a lack of transparency about the project, maybe because, like you said, it's a new option. Mm-hmm. I guess I would say option. I don't. So I don't really know. I mean, I would definitely want to hear from any priests that, you know, that listen to this show, you know, what their impression is of it, what they've heard about it, you know, what they think of it, that sort of thing. I think there was a question about how much more to maybe in part because of this different views about what to do with the data. There had been times when I think there was more likelihood that more people would just be outed. Uh-huh. As far as you mentioned about the legality, as far as our reporting shows, the country really doesn't have data privacy laws. I mean, there, but I'm not sure if there's complete, if there's any legal liability on the part of people who were part of this. And I'm wondering if that could be why there's a silence about it. I think we're kind of at the beginning of these data privacy issues mm-hmm. and defaming issues and that sort of thing. Also for the websites where, you know, you scroll through 50 pages and say, yeah, and then check something to use an app, whatever
right.
the app is.
Yeah.
And so is this a violation of their terms if they expose you or make you vulnerable, whether it's your, you know, social apps or your bank information or your, you know, where you live or whatever?
And I guess the question would be, you know, you, like you said, this is an age-old problem in the church, mm-hmm. but in the olden days, it might have been somebody following the priest around mm-hmm. after hours to see where he's heading into
right.
and what seedy part
right.
of town. But
this
now, when you're confronted with data, it's almost like you can't confront your accuser. And
right.
and that has always been kind of a standard when you're accused of something, you know, just in our American
in
law.
Canon law.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and canon law, right?
Right. Right. Well,
yeah,
I'm
have not... a right to face to know what's against you.
Yeah.
You have a right to know what's the data being, what's the evidence against you, and to see it and defend yourself.
Right. So I think that would be right. One question that would probably need clarification as this new technology is moving forward. Where do we stand today? When you were investigating this group, are they continuing it? Did they tell you what's ahead or anything like that?
No, they had originally just asked me, you know, they hired a PR firm and said, mm-hmm. can you give us a little more time? Mm-hmm. And then just ghosted me and kind of put up a blog post saying, you know, this is actually part of, and then that day they created a website sort of, you know, so I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what they have, what they're doing going forward, but I've mm-hmm. seen a couple of like blogs outside of that area saying, you know, this project is a great thing. And, you know, the media is sort of secular media is trying to harm the church or something like that.
It is a challenge. I think it's got a lot more questions than answers right now at this point. But we appreciate your reporting on it, Michelle, and getting us up
to
speed. Michelle Borstein,
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. WashingtonPost.com, you can see the article and her investigative work with her team there. Coming up next, Rusty Reno from First Things. He's got... he's a very faithful Catholic, and he's got some thoughts on this story next, and we'll break them out on LA Catholic Morning. Stay with us.
Home is where the heart is, and my heart lives by the bay. If home is where the heart is, then my heart lives by the bay.
Welcome back to LA Catholic Morning. Ellen Taylor here with you. On the line with us, we have Rusty Reno. He is the editor of First Things, and you can check out all their good work at firstthings.com. And we're looking at an article he wrote, Clerical Integrity and Hookup Acts. And to just continue on, because we got a lot of facts in the last segment from Michelle Borstein. She is the reporter for the Washington Post, kind of laid out from a clinical point of view of the facts of what happened with this situation. And Rusty, I feel like you're coming in to fill in some of the things that we're missing and just kind of give a little bit of perspective. Welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be on the show with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So when I was first reading the story, when it first broke, when was that? In 2021, that Monsignor Burrell had been outed as being on Grindr, which is a dating app for gay men. And he'd been outed by data that had been tracked and mapped out to his phone. And it turns out it's the same way that advertisers use to target you in seeing ads. So it's a well-known data government law enforcement uses it in capturing criminals, so it's not unheard of. I guess this was the first we'd seen it been applied to trying to, I guess, break down Catholics who are celibate and taking a vow and then not living up to their vows. So it's a whole new world, as I said on the last segment, Rusty.
Well, yes and no. Mm-hmm. I guess the analogy here is drug tests for employment.
Mm-hmm.
So even in states where marijuana is legal, many large corporations still have drug tests. And because I guess pot use is correlated with, you know, absenteeism and on the job and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. So, you know, and the marijuana trace stays in within you for about 30 days. And so the drug test is, in effect, a kind of surveillance technique mm-hmm. That's been around for decades. And so here you have a kind of analogous situation where you're an organization, the Catholic Church, you want to screen for certain kinds of behaviors, and this data, which can be bought by advertisers to target ads, can also be bought to be analyzed, because mm-hmm. you have to analyze in order to target the ads anyway.
So they've they've laid this out, and I guess it's coming in the news again because perhaps those of us that encountered the story, you know, a year or two ago, I guess thought it was done. But this is actually an ongoing collection of data. And although, and I have to give the group credit of not publicly outing it, but taking it perhaps to their superiors, and that is the right thing to do, in my opinion, because you give somebody that the goal of it is to try to, first in a compassionate way, help somebody with an issue. But if they're not, they are not right to be a Catholic priest, and they are not honoring their vows, and their superior needs to handle it. Is that what has been going on, or do you have any background of what the group is doing with the data?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were not involved in the publicly exposing, mm-hmm. Oh, what's his name, the priest who was the secretary for the U.S. Catholic Bishops. So yes, their policy is to take the information to seminary rector, you know, bishop, and inform the bishop, and then it's up to the bishop as to what action to take. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea, you know, and there's no public information, and that's appropriately confidential. Mm-hmm. These sorts of actions.
Have you heard anything, because it's all legal what is being done, but I guess sometimes the gray areas is, and I hate to put feelings in this because we don't run ourselves on feelings necessarily, but it's one of those stories that if you're a everyday Catholic, maybe makes you uncomfortable, Rusty?
Yeah, I don't see why. I mean, if your coworker is married and you notice that he has a Tinder, he's you know, swiping on his Tinder app, and Tinder is, these are not dating apps, Grindr and Tinder. These are hookup apps. Mm-hmm. And they're not designed to get people together for long-term relationships. They're designed to get people in the next 30 minutes to have sex with each other. Mm-hmm. And so if your colleague was doing that and is married, I mean, what would you feel? I mean, I don't think you have an obligation to tell his wife, mm-hmm. but I certainly don't think it's a violation of privacy, quote unquote, to tell his wife. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you would require discernment on your part. You know, you don't want to do more harm than good.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, we all have a duty to the sanctity of marriage, mm-hmm. as well as to, you know, a spouse that's being betrayed. So it's not clear to me at all that this is untoward for this organization to gather this data, analyze it, and report it to the people in position of authority who need to take action. Any more than, you know, in our own private lives, in our own personal lives, we face these kinds of situations.
We're speaking with Rusty Reno. He is the editor of First Things, and you can check all their work at firstthings.com. Rusty, it feels like sometimes we are entering a new age in regards to just all the things that can be done with technology and perhaps points we hadn't considered. I can imagine you didn't think a decade or two ago that you would be writing about or commenting on some of these issues, but the world really moves fast, and sometimes we have to take a moment to see how things like the data and technology and how they affect our life lived in the Catholic Church. Are you encountering more challenges like this than you ever thought you would?
No, I think 10 years ago I was aware that everything I did online was being surveilled. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago I was
wow.
aware that
mm-hmm.
everything I did online was being surveilled. I mean the software, the artificial intelligence that allows Google to target ads has been refined dramatically in the last decade. Mm-hmm. But even 10 years ago, you were aware that you were being targeted on the basis of your online activity. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that, you know, we as a nation, we have a very strong commitment to personal freedom, and we as a nation may decide to strengthen privacy protections of individuals. Mm-hmm. Europeans are way ahead of us here in regulating online companies and what they can use with private data that they gather about individuals. And, you know, maybe it's time as a country, and I would not be opposed to that.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I would not be opposed to laws that would prohibit what this organization, Catholic Laity and Clergy for Renewal, that's the one that collected that information. I wouldn't be opposed to laws that prevented that from happening, as long as they also applied to the advertising companies that were going to tell me that there's a McDonald's around the corner.
So true. We get it from all angles. And to that point, too, I was reading that a lot of these dating apps, like the Grindr, I don't know about Tinder, but some of the other ones, they are now not partnering with third-party people to release data because of privacy issues. And maybe you will see more instances where that happens because the data is available. It's out there. It's being sold for mostly for advertising reasons, but in this instance as well. So this group, where they come from, do they do anything else in the realm of, I guess, trying to keep clergy, and it kind of says it by their name, Catholic Laity and Clergy for Renewal. What else are they doing? Do you know much about that group?
I don't know.
Okay.
Much about that group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their mission is to provide assistance to bishops with respect to clerical formation. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not sure if they do other things as well.
Yeah. Have you gotten a lot of or any feedback from your readers on First Things? Is it one of those issues that is becoming questions or a lot of comments back and forth? Or is this just part and parcel, Rusty, for us living in a digital age that this kind of thing is happening?
I think people are, the sort of readership for First Things is very much in favor of clerical celibacy.
Oh, yeah. I got to say most Catholics are.
Yes. But I think that there is a anxiety or a concern about how much of our lives are now exposed and potentially can be exposed because of we conduct so much of our lives online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the old days, you went to the store and you paid cash but with credit cards and every time you get on an airplane and, you know, there's tremendous amount of data being collected about us all the time, and not just when we're, you know, clicking on our phones, but also, like I say, when we use our credit cards and so forth.
And
I do think that people are aware of this, mm-hmm. and even if they support this group and the efforts of this group in this particular matter, I think everyone's a bit anxious by how exposed they are to in their online life and in all aspects of their lives.
Which
maybe this will prompt people to think about. What's the proper level of protection of our privacy? I think that's a really important issue for us all to be thinking about, and as we go forward in the digital age.
You know, we used to have that back in the old days, where kind of the culture or the community, through the eyes and ears of the people looking out their windows or whatever, we kind of had this. Helped the culture stay on the straight and narrow because of the peer pressure of the community. And this almost is a 21st century kind of same way, whereas if your data is going to be used or you know you're going to be exposed, it's like it almost is, but just taken to the next level in many ways. And I wonder, Rusty, will this kind of, because sometimes peer pressure keeps culture in line from going out too far off the rails, and I wonder if this will be something like that, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I think the Washington Post article,
mm-hmm.
You know, widely circulated, I'm sure, among clergy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
it will no doubt have a deterrent effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever your impulses are, if you're in seminary or you're a priest, you're going to be very, very reluctant to download the Grindr app or the Tinder app. And to my mind, that's a good outcome.
Mm-hmm.
We all need Because I agree with you. You know, it's, you know, in the old days, it used to be you didn't want to go into the mm-hmm. into the porn shop and whatever. And this is also a helpful deterrent.
Yeah, you're right. Rusty Reno, I'm sure you're going to have more breaking down this issue in time to come. Firstthings.com. Rusty Reno, thanks for joining us.
All right, great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Great. Have a good day. Man, it's a new world, Mike, we live
it
in.
Is.
I'm telling you that right now. Oh, we thank our sponsor, Spring Hill College, making their students real world ready. Spring Hill College, one of the most affordable Jesuit Catholic colleges in the country. See all Spring Hill has to offer at shc.edu. Mike, what's going on tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow we'll talk with Dr. Chad England about his article on Nietzsche and Benedict XVI. Jonathan Liedl discusses what's going on with the German Synod. And Michael Foley discusses his book, Dining with the Saints. And really quickly, Kevin, what's going on with the Turley frequency this morning?
Today we speak media evangelization with Carl Olson. We pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and then we talk Alabama astronomy with Dr. Michelle Wooten.
Ooh.
Nice.
Wow, who knew Alabama was so much into astronomy there?
That's right. Football, basketball, astronomy.
Oh, look at that, Mike. All things Alabama
it's
here.
It's all written in the stars, man.
That's why we call it L.A. Catholic Morning, Lower Alabama.
That's right.
We'll see you tomorrow.
God bless you. Don't forget to call your mama. Mm-hmm. She loves you.